but it's a true story. And I'm sitting in right here, Harry. I've known Harry since he's a little puppy. As a matter of fact, I was Harry's drug sponsor. And I kind of silent 12 steps him into the rooms by leading by example and not saying anything to him. Anyway, I'm from the Atlanta area. As y'all can see with this great beard, I'm not a spring chicken. And I'm proud. I'm just proud to be here because people bet I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't make it to my 30th, to my 40th, to my 50th. I fooled them all. I fooled myself. But anyway, I'm here to talk about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And it's a big difference. And hope that someone gets something out of it. If not, I know I will. And I told Tim when he asked me, with my new job the last 6 months, I worked 12 hours a day, 6 days a week. And I was a two or three meeting goer up to this, and my meetings have gone down only because of my responsibilities, and I only go on Sunday mornings, which is the only day I don't work. And I told them thank you, because what it really did is it got me out of myself, and I had to come and live up to my responsibility, and that's delivering the message of AA, and that's why I'm here tonight. Anyway, I was born in Atlanta, May 15th, 1949. Y'all figure it out. I'm 62, going to be 63 years old. I think the only one older than me in the room is Frank, okay, or Santa Claus. But I wasn't nothing special. Average family, grew up in the Emory area, but early on, my parents or none of the doctors recognized anything that needed to be treated. And believe me, I needed to be treated early on, because how I knew is my mother always told all my friends, girlfriends, or anybody from college on, when they come over to the house for dinner or anything, that she would tell us, well, Alan wasn't a great student, but the one thing he was consistent about, he failed, and that was conduct. I mean, that was kindergarten on. So if you didn't know that I was ADD or whatever from early on and untreated, I mean, that was it. I acted out. She had every one of my report cards, and it always said, Alan can't sit still. Alan does this. Alan needs attention. But that was the isms right there. I mean, early on. I mean, from 5, 6 years old. It's documented, you know. So, and I did not realize it till later on in life. Other people didn't realize it till later on in life either. But it was not. Anyway, I'm going to get into really the solution. I'm not going to get into the problem a whole lot. I'll just tell briefly, because y'all don't have enough time. Okay, y'all really don't, and I don't either. I came right from work. I've got my name tag on, and it's not because it's ego, because y'all know my name. I'm up here telling my story. I just came right from work. And what it was is, and I'm sure a lot of y'all can identify with me, with ADD and the isms and always getting in trouble in fights and getting caught for whatever. I mean, I'm sure I'm not unique, and or else y'all wouldn't be in this room, whether y'all want to admit it or not. I always hung around the older kids. I needed the attention. I got the attention, you know, and it was always, it went on and on and on for years. And then early on, when I was 13 years old, I was 8th grade, and we didn't have middle school. We got sent right to, it was called being a freshman. We went right to high school in 8th grade. So I got thrown in with the crowd, and I was a good ball player, and I actually made the B team varsity in baseball. Even though I didn't start, I dressed out with them, pictures. And so, you know, it was a big deal, and I started drinking at the age of 13. And, well, I started earlier because my father used to give parties, and he'd drink his scotch. And he would say, come here, and he'd let me dip my finger when I was real young and then taste it, then he'd let me sip a little. So when I was about 10 years old, and it's also documented, my brother, who's Harry's age, 5 years younger than me, even though he looks 10 years older, it's okay, not a problem, but we had a party, and my brother was like, maybe I was younger than 10, it must have been 2 or 3, and we had a barbecue going, and my dad gave me a little sip of his scotch, and my little brother saw it, who was also in the program, this guy, 23 years, saw me, and he took the little thing, instead of putting his finger, he drank it. No one saw him drink it. Well, I watched him, and I saw him kind of wobble into the house, and he fell on the floor, and I thought he was dead, and I ran and got my dad, and the next-door neighbor was an internist, and we rushed him to the emergency room. My dad was a brute. My dad was a bad man, but he was real worried, and he took him into the emergency room. They're asking, Mr. Siegel, okay, let me get the information, and he said, what's your son's name? Well, I'm Alan, and my younger brother's Mark. He said, Alan Siegel. So before I ever took my really first drink and got drunk, I'm in the record book of being the one that got drunk and my stomach pumped. True story. Well, this is how my life was. It kind of felt good that I got involved in this story. It kind of filled that little void that I got the attention, even though it wasn't me. But going through high school as a ball player, and I did everything you can do wrong. Skip school, you know, I'd hit two doubles, and on the intercom and in the home room, they were always announced, Ron Blomberg, Rudy Kennard, and if anybody knows Ron Blomberg, he played for the Yankees, number one draft choice in the 60s. Alan Siegel hit two doubles, and they would look at me. I wasn't in school that day. You know, so I would get expelled or suspended. You know, I would go to Grady High School, which I didn't go to, got into a fight. All my relatives went to Grady, and they called me in and had me locked up. And they said, well, we're not going to lock you up. We're just going to expel you from school. And I said, thank you very much. And I laughed, but I didn't even go to that school. So, you know, they did me a favor. It went on for years. On for years. I was one of those fortunate guys that when the alternative use of alcohol came around, and I was a drinker. I was definitely a drinker. I got suspended from school for having liquor in my locker, and you know, I was a drinker. That was the drug of my choice, and it was my first drug of choice. But last year of high school, in the summer, before I went to college, I got introduced to other alternatives, and it didn't take me long. I wasn't one of these guys that just fooled around. I went from point A to point Z in 0 seconds. You know, I went from smoking dope, dropping pills, to shooting dope in 3 weeks. You know, why mess around? That was my MO. And I stayed in trouble. I made 3 years of college, dropped out. I couldn't continue anymore. I really couldn't. In any kind of trouble, and I was the one, and Harry can verify it. Anytime I got in trouble, my father was very well connected downtown in DeKalb County. They would lock me up, and they go, oh, you're Milton's son. You can go. Just give me your driver's license for, you know, and you can go. And I'd come back the next day and get my, you know, my father was well connected. Really, I thought it was great. It was really negative permission to keep doing what I was doing. It was not helping. You know, I now pass that on, that I've learned the hard way, that I can pass on my experience, strength, and hope to my sponsees or friends, that if they have children or spouses, that's not what we do, or that's not what I do, and that's not what my sponsors taught me. And I'm very fortunate. My home group, when I got sober, it was 8 o'clock men's Thursday night meeting right here. I don't come in too often. I come pick my chip up. I missed it this year. Last year, I was very fortunate. My sponsor sits right in the second row, not in the first row. My daughter, my 14-year-old daughter at the time, gave me my chip. She's never seen me drink. And, you know, that's a big deal. She actually lives with me. I'm the custodial parent. And that doesn't happen for men through divorce, that the judge awards you your child. Now, I didn't say it was easy, but it's great for me. You know, it keeps me focused. I know what I have to do. That's why I work the 12 hours a week, 6 days a week. I know I have to do it, and I don't have a choice. You know, if I wasn't with a child, there's no telling. I wouldn't be in Atlanta. I'd try to figure out how to live on a beach, but, you know, that's another story. But anyway, that's a lot of my life has continued like that. But, you know, let's go back and let's really, when I came back, I tell you, and I'll hit this one spot, and then I'll kind of get back really in, not in, but I will get in the solution. By the late 70s and early 80s, I was totally out of control. I mean, people in any neighborhood that knew me, and I've got no anonymity. That's what. And my first sponsor always tell me, why not say Alan S.? Why don't you say your last name? Can't look up Alan S. in a phone book if you need me, okay? That's what he told me. So that's why I always introduce myself as Alan Siegel. You can look me up in the phone book. I'm not anonymous, okay? But anybody in any of my neighborhoods or parents, they knew and they saw the difference. But when I used to go through the neighborhoods, the first thing they would say is, Alan's coming, take your children in off the street, turn the alarm on, put the burglar bars on. Even ask Harry. I even stole Harry's syringes for his dogs with diabetes because I had the keys to his house and denied it, okay? But, you know, it wasn't going to stop me. But, and it got real bad by 1982. I mean, it was real bad, you know. I've been in more institutions and jails, and thank God, you know, I thank God now, but I should have been put away a long time ago and probably still serving time. And I may have got sober a lot sooner, but who knows? But it is what it is, and I guess that's the way exactly how it turned out. But in 82, it got real bad. Harry had moved overseas. He moved overseas, and he went there, I think it was about 2 years. And my belly button birthday is May 15th, 1949, and that date's not significant, but the year before was Israel's independence, May 15th, 48. And even during 67, during the Six-Day War, I volunteered to go there. They just wouldn't have me. They probably did the right thing by not having me. But in 82, I tried the geographical change, and me and Harry exchanged, and Harry come back, and we wrote letters, or Harry says, you need to come over here. It's really great. So Harry come back. So I had all the communication. It was getting bad. So my parents agreed to send me to Israel, that geographical change. I don't go from state to state. I go to country, okay? True story. So in October 26, 1982, my mother took me to the airport, and they gave me a one-way ticket with $200. Now, my beard was fuller, and my hair was down to here, and Harry had told me to take these few words in Hebrew, make sure you have it. And etzba, that's for finger of hash, and keys, and that was a kilo of hash to talk to the Arabs, you know, in Hebrew. Well, I had it all written down in my pocket. So I go through customs, and I get on the plane, and I'm with the Italian soccer team, and I'm Jobs, and I'm detoxing, okay, and I'm shaking, and I'm on this big airplane by myself going to a strange country, and so I started drinking scotch. You know, what else are you going to do? I'm trying to get the shakes to go away, and this Italian side, you leave it to an alcoholic and drug addict. Put on a plane, going overseas, and the guys go, you want to snort some cocaine? You know, well, I didn't even like cocaine, but, you know, I did it just to party and did it. So I got to Tel Aviv. Harry didn't tell me about the security. And I go to security, and they look at me, and I'm the last one in line. I'm trying not to go through, okay? And it's tight. And they call me, and they get me in this little room. And they're questioning me for 3 hours. I'm sweating. Now, I don't have anything on me. I'm detoxing. And I got all these little Hebrew things referring to drugs. And I got $200 in my pocket with a one-way ticket. And I said, well, I'm Jewish. I'm going to a kibbutz to work on a kibbutz. And that. And they're questioning me. And I know I got problems. And they thought I was a terrorist because they go, you only got $200 and a one-way ticket? I mean, come on. You know, that's like a dead giveaway, you know. I should have said Allah Akbar and they would have locked me up. But, you know, they didn't. It was just one of those things. It was all, you know, and so they finally let me go. And Harry had made arrangements with some people he had met from Canada to pick me up. Of course, they outside 6 hours. I thought they left me, but they actually stayed and waited for me. So I lived there, and of course, being a good drug addict and alcoholic, we always fall on our feet. I became part of this kibbutz and a member, and I married a girl from Israel, and I married a family that was very famous, and all the museums and every kind of position in the army. And I mean, when they heard who I was married to, with respect, it was kind of, well, it lasted about 5 years. I worked hard. It was great. It was one of the greatest experiences I've ever had. Harry will probably tell you the same thing. But it still did not, my shadow went with me. That's the point. No matter how far I got away from here, I was still there with my shadow, and it didn't change. Now, I didn't do any hard drugs, but I sure bought a lot of keys. That's a kilo of hash. And, of course, it was Cheech and Chong in my house because my wife at the time was away for 4 years studying at a Technion, and so I had to place it myself, and every American volunteer and every European volunteer was at my house smoking dope. And so you open the windows, it was like Cheech and Chong up in smoke. Okay, it was. Well, after 5 years of marriage, she had enough, and I totally understood it, and I came back, and it was probably the best thing that ever happened. Now, the solution, when I came back, and almost 5 years to the day. Now, you got to realize, I left one part out. I was in the Israeli army, because when you get married, you got to become a citizen. Okay? So they don't ask you. They come and pick you up in a taxi, a big old 500 Mercedes, and they put you in there and take you to get your physical, and they sent me off. So I drove a tank in the Israeli army, and it was a big, great experience. Of course, they called me Alan the Crazy American and JR. They loved my accent. And, you know, everything I did, it was always, I had to be the best, you know, and I always fell on my feet, and they always looked at me, and I entertained them. But it got old for my wife, and she asked for a divorce, and we were, and it was amicable, and she actually took me to the airport. We came back, and I remember my brother and one of my best friends picked me up at the airport. It was 5 years to the day, the 26th of October to the in 87, and they picked me up, and when I got home, my mother said, "Now, you ready to go back to your AA meetings?" And I said, "Oh, you want?" And I said, "Mom, I didn't shoot any dope in 5 years." Well, let me tell you how it works. So, people, I came home in 82, October. Our business was at Briarcliff and La Vista Road down from Channel 5. So there's Briarcliff and La Vista near Tucker, and there's on this side. And we lived at Georgia Mental Health and at North Decatur and Briarcliff. So it's only like 2 miles to work and back. So I started working for the family business. And when I left in 82, my drinking hole was P.J. Haley's. And that was at Sage Hill. So I had to pass it every day, back and forth from work. And I passed it the first week, and I didn't stop in. Well, I stopped in after the first week. And when I went in there, it was like Cheers. 5 years, I've been gone. Same manager, same bartender, same people still sitting in the same stool. You know, they didn't know I was gone. "Hey, Alan, how you been?" They didn't even know I was gone. So I started drinking. They kept me into the manager's room. We snored a line here and two. And let me tell you what, I was back off to the races. After 5 years of not doing any hard drugs, it was like I had never stopped. So everything happened as far as going overseas, coming back in October. Well, finally, I hit bottom. I can tell you that I told you at the beginning, October 17, 1989. Now, no one realizes that was the day of the San Francisco earthquake. I was in my bedroom, getting off, drunk, and a guy that I met here that was just like me had got about 3 or 4 months. You know, he used to sit back in one corner. I'd sit back in another corner. We both come 5 minutes late. He'd leave 5 minutes early. I'd leave 5 minutes early. And we'd look at each other and make contact, but we'd never. So finally, we became a little close, and he came by my house. And I thought I was ODing because it was the World Series of the Bay. It was Oakland and San Francisco, and I'm watching the game. The TV goes blank because of the earthquake, and I thought I'd lost my mind. And my friend John came in and says, "What are you going to do?" I said, "You need to take me to treatment." You know, that was that spiritual moment, that divine intervention. That's, you know, so he took me to Decatur Hospital. And I don't know what happened. I knew then when I got there and they were doing all the notes, and I started talking after being in treatment 20 times in every hospital here. I said, make arrangements for me to go to Halfway House. And I don't know where that came from, because I used to fight that, you know. I wanted to get the detox and whatever, the 30 days that I never made, and jumped out the window and I was gone. But I started, and it was that moment of clarity. It wasn't a burning bush. And I don't question it, but that's exactly what happened. And from that day to now, I've never wanted to drink or do a drug again. But it's been hard work, and I've had a lot of things happen. You know, and you know what it was like when I got sober. Things got good very fast because I got connected. You know, I did. I remember when I first came downstairs, and I had 30 days, and you couldn't, or less than 30 days, you couldn't get downstairs. And my first sponsor, who I buried 3 or 4 sponsors, stick with me, Bob, don't go nowhere, okay? And it's not because I killed them. It's not. You know, they were all old timers, but I was very fortunate. Emmett was in charge, he was ex-president or whatever. He never sponsored. I asked him to sponsor me. I used to sit downstairs. He'd give me a temporary pass to get in. And I didn't have 30 days, or just had 30 days. And I'd drink, and Hazel was down there. Because every morning I had breakfast, and I'd get a cup of coffee and shake. And I said, just tell me something to keep me sober. Hazel still sees when I see her. She still tells me the same thing. There is a God, and you're not him. And that made sense to me. You know, that really, you know, that was the first thing that I heard that made sense to me, that helped me say, well, my God, I don't have to do all this on my own. Then I'd sit down with some of these old timers who were really sicker than me, and they listened to me for about 4 months before I asked Emma to really sponsor me. Harry, I forgot Harry, the one that moved out wherever. And I talked to him, and then after about 4 months, I looked at them and I said, you know, I don't know how y'all listen to me. I can't listen to myself anymore. So I said, what do I got to do? And they pointed, you know, they pointed to the wall. They told me, you need to get a sponsor and start working the steps. And that's what I did. You know, I got real into it real quick. You know, it took me 3 or 4 months, but when I got into it real quick, and I became very active. You know, I did workshops. I went all over. I went on sober vacations with friends of mine, you know. And I didn't go on a pulpit preaching. We would take people, we'd do it was called a gratitude run. We'd take people after late meetings, 10 o'clock meetings even. Me and my friend John, who brought me to my first meeting, we'd take people down to Ponce de Leon and Piedmont. They were on the streets sleeping. You know, and whatever they were doing to live and make money and sleep in the wintertime, and we show these people for a couple of days, that could be you, that could be us. And we call it a gratitude run. We got a lot of people sober doing that. They didn't stay sober. I did. And, you know, after Emma died, I got very fortunate, and I got a sponsor. A few of you people here would remember him, was Dennis. Dennis was a big book Nazi, brother, let me tell you. And he wasn't anybody to mess with. About 6'3", 6'4", 240, 250, and he carried the big book on. And if you got out of line, he would throw it at you. And we held a big book meeting at my house 4 or 5 years, every Thursday night. As a matter of fact, the men's meeting here used to talk about us, because they said Dennis did it just to piss off the men's meeting here on Thursday night, because half the meeting was at my house because we had the big book meeting. But you know, when I go to different meetings around and workshops, I still see those same people, that same 20 or 30 people that are sober. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. You know, and I did what they told me to do. You know, I got up in the morning. Hey, Henry, how are you? Okay. Got to get rid of that shirt. I can't stand it. Anyway. But, you know, that's what I did. You know, Thursday night was at my house. And then it was my first house. You know, I got very lucky and got into my parents' business. Not the first year. I would not. You know, I was told by the therapist and my counselor, and it was like I had to become humble and let go of my ego with their, when they owned their own business. I went to work for Pep Boys for minimum wage for a year, okay? And my parents owned an auto parts store that was thriving, and I did not go to work. I worked elsewhere just to show that I didn't need, and it really helped me. And that's what my sponsor suggested, and that's what I did until it was time, until I felt it was time that I can go into that family pressure and that it was time to go. And it worked. And it became very successful. And, you know, the sad news is, 8 years ago, you know, through my brother and I bought our parents. My father had passed away. We each had 5%. My mother had 90%. She was moving on. We bought her out. And we made a tremendous go at this business. We were one of the largest independent auto parts store in the Southeast. And for things that I won't get into, it partnership, it got very rough. And there was a lot of jealousy. And I won't say it was for my part, but I'll take whatever it is on my side of the street. And I won't say it's all his fault. And it took me a long time to realize that. And I sold my half. Okay, I sold it 8 years ago, and I had to go make it on my own, and I have. It hadn't been easy, but big difference from when I didn't have to worry and I could pay for everything and not worry about missing a meal to have to go bust, and I busted my butt doing that, but this is totally different for a lot less, and not for myself and have to take and work for somebody else and punch a clock and be on time and do whatever it takes to make a living, and you know, and that's my responsibility. That's what I've learned here. The people that are in these rooms, they never have lied to me in the 22 years that I've been sober. Anything they've told me has been the truth, and anything I've tried has worked. You know, through that, I broke up. It was very bitter. I talked to my brother today. You know, I've cleaned up my side of the street. I can't help it, you know, and whatever he wants to do, I don't begrudge him. And then, fortunately, you know, during that time, before I sold the business, I got married at a very late stage. You know, after I came back and I got divorced, I got married a month before my 46th birthday. And I thought I'd never get married again, and who would want to marry me? But, you know, I got married, and we got pregnant the day we got married, before we went on our honeymoon. And it's true, her father was an OBGYN. He counted the days. It was 9 months to the day, so he was okay with that. But it didn't take long. I came home after she had a nice job at Emory, and I came home, and she was drunk. After she was 6.5 years sober, same as me when we got married, I came home with a 3-month-old baby in a high chair, and she's passed out in it. And, of course, I talked to, before Bob, I had another sponsor who's still in my life, and I helped her, and she went into treatment, got sober, and she went back out again. Finally, I should have left twice, and I didn't. Finally, she asked me for a divorce 4.5 years ago, and I was blown away. You know, she's actually got 10 years sober this past August, and we're actually friends. It took 4 years. But this last year, and me and Bob discussed it, and Bob helped me, you know, by working the steps and doing what I was told to do and pray for the other person. Tonight, my daughter's supposed to be with me tonight. She called me up last night. I heard you telling your story at NABBA. I'll pick Mara up from school and she'll stay with me. You know, a year ago, there was no way. There was no way that would ever happen, okay? So, you know, for people, that should be hope, that it is, if you do and follow directions and do what you're told and talk to your sponsor or your tree, and Bob will tell you, I'm really, if you get on my phone list and give me your number, you're in trouble. Bob doesn't like to call people. I've taught him how to use a phone. The old timers, and I don't, 22 years now, the old timers don't know how to use a phone. Okay, you have to teach them, okay? So if you got an old timer as a sponsor or nurse, you teach them. That's the trick. You have to teach them. One of the greatest tools we have in AA is a telephone. Bob and Bill did not have that luxury. If they were at home and called somebody, no one was there, they were on their own, okay? I feel very fortunate and grateful for a cell phone, because that has kept me sober many a time. Or really, the alcohol and drugs never came in, but the thought of killing and homicide, you know, that came in many a times. And, you know, I picked up the phone. That is one of the great, we talk about tools. That's a tool that the old timers didn't have. So that's why we had, you know, when my first sponsor was dying, I was right at a year. He came and gave me my first chip. He said he wasn't going to make it, and he did. Harry was there drunk. He hadn't got sober yet. He was there drunk. But he was at my first anniversary. Right? And my sponsor got up because this was the ego thing. I don't know if they still have it about the singleness of purpose. Well, a lot of people hated it. And I used to go to CA. I didn't even do cocaine. But I went to CA because it was people my age and it was a thing. And I went and I became a trusted servant of GSR, you know, for about my first year. I was celebrating. And Emmett came, who had never done a drug in his life, dying of cancer. And he goes, and he wasn't going to come. And he showed up. And he said, my name is Emmett Kirkland. I'm a drug addict. Well, my mouth dropped open. I said, what are you talking about, Emmett? He said, I'm a drug addict. So happens that my choice of drugs is alcohol, the oldest known man-made drug. And it is. So I don't usually introduce myself as a drug addict because I'm an alcoholic. That got me where I was. That was my first drug of choice. I loved it. And I'm sure if I put one in my mouth today, I would be off to the races again. And Harry and I were just alike. Not too many people can hang with me and Harry. Wild Turkey 101 straight up. Okay, chase it with the Heineken's and have fun. But, you know, so I know I'm an alcoholic. Period. And everything else, But you give me something, I'll run with it. I don't mess. I go to A to Z from, like I said, the beginning, zero. But, you know, my divorce came. It was devastating, expensive. We're friends today. It's through the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. The day I was told I had to go to Bob's house, his sponsor, or they sponsor each other, had just moved to California. Steve was in town, and they laughed at me. I was foaming at the mouth. They were laughing at me. And they looked at me when I told them, because I knew the whole story that I could have left twice with custody. And they were laughing. I said, why are you laughing? They're going, it's God doing for you what you can't do for yourself, dummy. You know, you couldn't leave her. You'd still be in that sick relationship. And it was true. Because I tried to make it work. Like I did everything else. I always tried to make it work, whether it was for myself and my own selfish motives. But I always tried to make it work for myself, no matter what it was. The back door. I always tried to figure the softer, easy way. And that was really what it was. And I heard that message. Just leave it to two old-timers, you know? I mean, they're wise beyond their years. You just guys that don't have a... You need to go find someone you can talk to. My first, when I was a year old, a year sober, he was 12. That was an old-timer. You know, I remember a girl called me and says, I just want you to come over. I want to be a bad girl today. You know, I've been married, and I've always liked you. Come over. And I'm going, okay. My first year, I've waited a year, right? I've waited a year. So I made a dumb mistake. I called my sponsor. That little thing on my shoulder. Call your sponsor. So I did. I heard exactly what I didn't want to hear. He says, if you're willing to pay the consequences, go ahead. So I said, okay, and I hung up on him. I was sitting on my couch, and I'm going, consequences, let me see. Nobody will know. He's out of town. The kids are sleeping. I got a year sober, and it says wait a year. That's a suggestion. It's not in the big book or any literature, but I said, I've waited a year. Let me. And then I'm going, oh, shit. You know, I said, oh, first of all, I'm going to go home. I'm going to know. That's the real first thing in my conscience. That was the real first act of some kind of conscience that I had. I said, I'll know. And then she's going to wake up feeling different and acting different for the kids and her husband. And I didn't go. That's so unlike me. I didn't go. Harry will tell you. It's so unlike me that I didn't go. You know, don't know where it came from. But it was just like that first day that I went, and I knew it was that moment of clarity. I don't know. You know, if you do the right things and plug in and start taking suggestions, and I hit my knees, and I still do it today. I still read my daily reflections every day. And I talk, even at work, if I don't make two or three meetings a week, what I haven't in the last 6 months, I go to workshops from Florida to Virginia, two in Atlanta. I spoke at them. So, you know, I'm not a circuit speaker, trust me. I promise you that. They don't ask me to go national. But I do all these things because that's what the old timers and these people that showed me in my first year that I went to the workshops and people that I see from my first workshop that when I sit behind a tree in a hot hour or sit by on a bench by myself and they come up and talk to me and ask me, I still see them 22 years later and they go, how's that thing that you had problem? And they remember from 22 years ago, no one ever listened to me. No one cared. I could, how do you feel? I'd say, fine. And my wife would say, no one wants to hear it. I said, but they asked me. I'm going to tell them. But these people, they actually wanted to know, and they actually asked me. And it's the first time anybody listened to me and wanted and asked me how you doing a year later and remembered what I said. You know, this is what, you know, I'm so grateful. I told you, I've got my daughter. You know, I got her when I was 59 years old. For the last 3.5 years, she's living with me. She doesn't want to go to her mother's. Her mother realized she can't handle her. It's not that she's not sober right now. She's got 10 years, like I said. She's just not capable of handling her. You know, and I'm just grateful that these things happen. You know, I've done most of my amends. I've still got a bunch, you know, from my... You know, sometimes at my age, and try to find someone a lot older than you are to make. But what I've learned from my second sponsor and my sponsor sitting here is I don't have to make the amends to your face. Or my mother was a great example. I loved her. I still miss her. This 24th of this month, it'll be 11 years. And I called her every night after she passed away. We kept her house in the... voice machine was still on. I used to call her, listen to her voice, and leave her a message every night because I called her every night for years and talked to her at 9:30, so I left her a message. But, you know, I learned that I can go to the cemetery and I can write notes and go and talk to them and do things like that. You know, these are all things that are powerful and relieve me of this guilt that I carried for so many years. You know, I mean, I sat and did my first fifth step in a Waffle House after a meeting at Oglethorpe at whatever, I can't remember, I don't go there anymore. And I'd sit in the Waffle House and I had this whole list off my fourth step and Dennis is going, scratch that one, send her flowers, buy TVs at Macy's since she stole so much, or whatever you need, buy from Macy's. And I'm going, you know, because I owed so much money, I didn't know how I was going to do it. And that's why we have sponsors and steps. He took me through them and told me what I thought and how I thought I was going to have to do it. It was like the Titanic. I was going down. You know, I was going down. And when he explained it to me, it was so simple. But if I didn't ask, and I didn't ask for a sponsor, and I didn't work the steps, I wouldn't ever know. You know, I really wouldn't. You know, it was very clear early on, and I followed the directions. And God knows, you know, it's truly, truly amazing. I'm just about out of time. That's good. I don't know how much more to say. I mean, I didn't get into the whole trunk log because I can tell you and make you laugh and everything else. But it's the 22 years. I tell people it's a great 22 years, no matter how rough it's got, because there's nothing that's happened to me that I wanted to take a drink or a drug. There's nothing worth it. I remember my last drug and drink, and I don't want to be back there. I don't want to be that miserable. You know, I don't want to be where my friends wouldn't pick up a phone and I couldn't go to their house because their young children were there and they wouldn't let me in the house. Today I can go to any one of my friends' house. I've watched them. I've eaten dinner there. I'm welcome to any one of my friends' house. And people come from work and know me. And I don't have to tell them I'm an AA. They see the difference. They ask me, what happened? You know, they see it in me. They do. They really see it in me. So before I close it out, I want to read something I read. And Emmett, my first sponsor, gave it to me, and I've got the first one. It's falling apart, but I always buy, when they fall apart, I buy another one. You think I know it by heart after 22 years. I don't, because I'm ADD, and so if I read it today, it's gone 10 minutes later. But I've read it for 22 years, and every time I read it, I see something different, almost like the Big Book. And this morning, when Tim had asked me to do this, and really it was great. Like I said, one meeting a week is really not enough, but I know in my heart I've come to grips with it. I know that's the best I can do right now to meet my other responsibilities. So I read it and I said, I really don't want to do this. Why did Tim ask me, why don't I blah, 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 blah. And I read my thing that's thinking about this morning. Maybe I just won't show up. I always show up. But, you want to, that's called mental masturbation for anybody that hasn't figured that out. And I was trying to figure out how not to come, but it wasn't going to happen. And I pick up this morning's daily reflection, and it's a common solution. And it talks about why I'm really here, what is the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it talks in the literature. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out of which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmoniously action. This is the great news that this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. And that's up from page 17 of the Big Book. And then they always have someone that writes after that what it means, kind of their interpretation. It says, the most far-reaching 12-step work was the publication of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Few can equal that book from carrying the message. My idea is to get out of myself and simply do what I can, even if I haven't been asked to sponsor and my phone rarely rings, I am still able to do 12-step work. I get involved in brotherly and harmonious action. It means I show up early to greet people and help set up and to share my experience, strength, and hope. I also do what I can with service work. My high power gives me exactly what he wants me to do at any given point in my recovery. And if I let him, my willingness will bring 12-step work automatically. And during this period, when Tim asked me, my brother called me and wants me to be the discussion leader at another clubhouse Saturday the 24th, and that's the day my mother died. And I don't know if it was coincidence that he asked if he even realized it, because he wasn't as close. And I'm trying to work out details because I have to work and we have a sales meeting. But, see, that's God's message, because I'm doing the right things. And I'm just channeling it, and people ask, and it happened numerous times like that. If I just keep that open, and I'll end it with what Dennis told me when I first asked him to sponsor me. He used to talk about having conscious contact with God. And me and Bob talked it before the meeting. I really feel like I've had a tremendous, the last month or two, a really conscious contact with God. And what that means is, because I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. He contacts me. I don't contact him. But Dennis used to say to me, if you have a digital clock, the old Seiko or LED clock, when it was 111, 1212, 555, 444, he said, Alan, that's what I tell people. When 440 comes up on when I'm driving, I say, it's God's time. It's God's time. And for 20 years, every time the clock or anything, when I read it, it's 444. He says, that one little second that I thought about God's time, I got that conscious contact with God just by doing that little thing. That's open contact, conscious contact with God. My daughter, when I used to carpool when she was 5 years old in kindergarten, I used to say it. And then I started taking five or six of the little five-year-olds and the Suburban, and I go, that's God's time. And Mary used to say, Daddy, that's God's time. And all these kids would say, that's God's time. They didn't even know what they were talking about. And the mothers used to call me, what are you doing? What's God's time? But I got something, you don't think about it, but it's true. That's what, by being here and being connected, those little things, that's what helps me. I need to have a conscious contact with God. I'm glad everybody's here. Thank you for listening to me. If I didn't help anybody today, I know I helped myself. Thank you. Happy holidays. Every day's a holiday.
the great divide that separates you and me.
over here on the piano and on the organ, how about a big hand for Todd Hamrick? And back on the drums, that's Jeff Birch. Give it up for JB. And over here on the bass, you know him, you love him. That's the Evil One.
Thank you, Alan. That was right on time. It was.
Thank you.
Over here on the piano and on the organ, how about a big hand for Todd Hamrick? And back on the drums, that's Jeff Birch. Give it up for JB. And over here on the bass, you know him, you love him. That's the evil one.